Hey, Jessica. I was just reading this chapter on control systems, and it's actually pretty fascinating. It's all about how things work, from simple stuff like a toilet flushing to complex systems like the human brain. Want to dive in?
Sure, Liam. Sounds interesting. I'm always up for learning about how things are controlled. What's the gist of it?
Well, the chapter starts by defining what a control system is. Control systems turn sensor inputs into actuator outputs through communications channels. Basically, it's about taking information from sensors, processing it, and then using that to make something happen with actuators. It then breaks down different types of control systems, from simple to complex, and how they work.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's like a feedback loop, right? The system senses something, adjusts, and then senses again. What are some of the examples they use?
They start with a super simple example. One of the simplest control systems is the common toilet flushing system used in homes around the world.
The toilet. I never thought of that as a control system. How does it work?
It's actually pretty clever. It's got two main parts, the flusher and the filler. The flusher is the handle or button that you push, which lifts a flapper to dump water. The filler has a float that goes up and down with the water level. When the water gets low, the float opens a valve to let more water in. When the tank is full, the float closes the valve. It's a cycle. The chapter says, in combination, these components provide a control system in which, in sequence, the user activates the flusher actuator. The water in the tank dumps, the float lowers. The water flow valve starts to fill. The tank gets empty enough for the flapper actuator to close. The water fills the tank. The water keeps flowing. The float sensor gets closer. The water flow valve shuts completely.
Wow, that's a lot of steps for a simple flush. So, what are the key components in this control system?
They break it down. Sensors, the flush handle, the float, and the flapper flotation. Actuators, the water flow valve, the flush handle, and the flapper. Communications, the connections from the flush handle to the flapper, the float to flow valve, the flapper to the water and its hinge, and the water to the flapper and float. Controls, the flow valve mechanism, the flapper flotation and seal physics.
Got it. Sensors, actuators, communication, and the control mechanism itself. What else does the chapter cover?
It goes into control equations and how they're used to design systems that work reliably. It mentions that the toilet system will only work under specific gravitational, temperature, motion, and pressure conditions. It also talks about failure modes like the water freezing or the float getting stuck. It also mentions that the engineering of a toilet takes all of these factors and others into account in creating a control system designed to operate under desired conditions for its use. It also mentions that the engineering of a toilet takes all of these factors and others into account in creating a control system designed to operate under desired conditions for its use.
That makes sense. You have to design for the environment. What about different types of control systems?
The chapter explains the difference between bang-bang control, like the toilet, which is either on or off, and continuous feedback control. It also touches on feed-forward control, which anticipates future needs. It also talks about positive feedback and how it can cause problems like ringing in a system where things oscillate out of control. It also mentions that waves are present in physical systems and all systems are physical.
Interesting. So it's not just about the mechanics. It's about the physics of the system, too. What about natural control systems?
That's where it gets really cool. It talks about how natural systems, like weather, are also control systems based on thermodynamics. It says, generally, if there is something hot next to something cold, the cold thing will get hotter and the hot thing cooler because heat transfers between them at a rate depending on the particulars of the situation. It also mentions that the natural tendency for differences to become non-differences through physics is called entropy, often thought of as randomness.
So nature is constantly trying to reach equilibrium. But how do living things fit in?
That's the key. The chapter says, every cell or other arrangement of matter that we call a life form fights against entropy by creating or enforcing a structure of some sort. It explains how molecules, cells, and organisms are all examples of control systems that fight against entropy. It also mentions that these organisms that reproduce can be said to sense in that they alter in their chemical and movement of charges, electrical makeup, as they encounter components in the environment. Actuate in the sense that they ultimately assemble components into composites through their reproductive processes and produce waste components. Communicate in the sense that the shapes of their surfaces combined with the charges at their bond points attract matching components over a distance, also actuation, and in the sense that they transmit heat changes and waste components into the environment and receive waste components from the environment, some of which may be used for reproduction.
Wow, that's a whole new way of looking at life. It also talks about the hierarchy of operational capabilities. What does that mean?
It's about how systems get more complex. The chapter says, as systems get more complex, there are more complex control issues to consider. It then goes into biological processing and movement rates, and how fast things happen in the biological realm. It mentions that low-level movements in the biological realm are far faster than most folks imagine before they start to study the subject. It also mentions that the motion of their wings can be quite fast compared to human motions, and there are lots of other similar things you might want to look into for better understanding.
That's amazing. What about computers? How do they fit into this control system picture?
The chapter then dives into computer processing and movement rates. It explains that computer processing seems very fast at the instruction level, but it typically takes quite a few instructions in sequence before sensory input turns into an act through a control system. It then goes into the basics of a transistor control loop, a digital switching system, and how computers use combinational logic and storage to create finite state machines. It also mentions that computers are predominantly composed of FSMS. These FSMS take inputs, bits, in context of their current state, stored as bits, and produce outputs, bits, and updated states.
So, computers are essentially complex control systems themselves. What about larger control systems?
The chapter then goes into larger control systems, including biological systems, and how they use hierarchical control mechanisms. It also mentions that, in most industrial control systems, the need for timing constraints on physical elements of the process produces local FSMS in a programmable logic controller, PLC, that implements set points or bounds on input parameters from sensors and produce output to actuators to keep the media within the desired bounds, while using a higher-level, slower process, usually called a supervisory control and data acquisition, SCADA, system, to determine and implement changes in bounds and set points.
That's a lot to take in. What are some of the limitations of control systems?
The chapter talks about operating parameter limitations, interference limitations, and timing and coordination at a distance. It also mentions shielding and how it's used to protect systems from interference. It also mentions that designers in biological systems face complexity levels so high that no amount of available computing power or analysis or controls can accurately model effects of design or operational decisions on electromagnetic interference, thermodynamics, or other dynamic interactions.
So there are physical limits to how fast and how complex you can make a control system. What about central versus distributed systems?
The chapter explains the difference. Centralized control systems have the property that all of the signals from all of the sensors, all of the signals to all of the actuators, and all of the stored information are available for control in one place and all the time. Distributed systems, on the other hand, have the property that overall control is shared between more than one control mechanism. It also mentions that, at the network level in electronics, systems tend to be distributed hierarchies, but this is quite complicated and non-uniform, and will be discussed in later chapters.
That makes sense. Distributed systems can be more resilient, but they can also be harder to coordinate. What's the last part about?
It's about how control systems lead to cognizance. It says, as control system composites become larger aggregates of more components, an apparently emergent effect is an increasing level of cognizance. defined roughly in dictionaries as knowledge, awareness, or notice, in the overall composite. It also mentions that fundamental control system limits. This set of limitations of control systems appears to be an inherent result of the nature of time and space in control systems.